Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. I recognize the fact that there's kind of two momentous occasions for this week. And obviously today is the beginning of, well, we're past the halfway point for the year. So 6 months down, 6 months to go. And so I don't know if you had a lot of plans for the year, but if you made effective goals, you should be well on track, because we talked about how to set effective goals at the beginning of the year. Now, I will also say that this week is the week that we celebrate our Declaration of Independence. So I'm going to share with you a special view of the Declaration of Independence. Most people have read the Declaration, but most people have not read the original version of the Declaration before it went through political filters. And it was our first document as a republic, as an official document, but it was also tweaked for political correctness. So political correctness, my friends, has been around for a long time. Same thing with censorship. Censorship has been around for a long time. So when we reach the 4th on Thursday, at least near as I can tell, it's going to happen on Thursday, and instead of Independence Day, which is the 2nd, I will go ahead and read the original draft that was written by Thomas Jefferson. This way you can actually see his position as how he felt this nation had been undermined by King George in ways that have never been expressed in the politically correct version. So, as you know, we have a listen line, and if you want to listen in instead of stream, it's 605-562-4209 or 605-313-0599. Now, today I'm going to get into the myth of nullification. And so, as I said last week, we are going to cover that first thing. And so there's still some things that we'll wrap up, but we'll try to get to those later, because I want to make sure I hit the mark today regarding nullification and interposition. There are way too many people that do not understand the difference between nullification and interposition. And what the heck did Thomas Jefferson and James Madison really try to do? Way too many people are trying to convince people that, oh, well, they just tried to nullify the laws. Anybody that is telling you that, either one, doesn't understand what Jefferson and Madison were really trying to do, or they want you to believe in a process that really will be ineffective. Bottom line, because that is an ineffective process, especially today. So to be clear, we're going to be diving into that. But let me cover these other obligatories, because you may not have known this, but this show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. And this still is the only show on the airwaves, streaming over the internet, in any type of fashion that shows are being done. This is the only show that will talk about the real solutions in how to get the government back into check. Now, I want to put this on a little context. So I may go on to a tangent, and it may take me on an aside for too long, but it's important. I know that there's lots of people out there fighting these evils that they see in our world today. One of those evils being abortion, another evil being homosexual marriage. And these are paradigms of people that have a myopic focus because they see the damages that are being done by these agendas. And it's the same thing with the transgender movement now, because the homosexual movement has warped into and morphed out into the spheres of transgenderism, as well as pedophilia, as well as all the other ilias that are out there. And so I know that there's a lot of people that think of what I'm saying as hateful speech. I want to be very clear. When I talk about, especially on the sexual side, because, you know, those people like you, oh, you're a hater. I want to be very clear. I don't believe I know anybody that looks at the immorality as an evil sin, as something that we need to drag these folks out into the street and stone them. That is not the direction we're going. That's not where we need to be. Where we need to be is we need to be back into the ages of enlightenment. It's time you put your John Thomas away. It's time you start putting all these physical and carnal desires back into check. Use some discipline and get control of your life. Get control in the physical carnal sense and start really learning and expanding. Contribute. Don't let your mind be something that is just becomes a waste. Remember that there was a commercial, I forget what it was. The mind is a terrible thing to waste. It was about drugs and so forth, and it was the United Way, I think, that started that. The mind is a beautiful thing, is a terrible thing to waste. Whatever. It was a long time ago. But I see everybody wasting their opportunities and potentials of their opportunities given in this lifetime. I mean, we don't even come anywhere close to the capacity of our brain's usage. Why is it that all of a sudden we kick back, kind of, you know, surrendered to, you know, the body and allowed our mind to go down this path of trying to live in fantasy land? No, there aren't unicorns. Until there's empirical evidence that unicorns exist, there aren't any. I don't care if they used to exist. They don't now. So quit chasing them. So what we have to do is we have to actually back up and quit dabbling in just trying to fight the myopic issue. Quit trying to, you know, go toe-to-toe with evil regarding sexual debasement, whether it be abortion, whether it be welfare and entitlement. You're wasting your time. We have to start coalescing, and we have to recognize that all of these agendas are being supported by the federal government. You got to understand, the transgender warfare is being supported and being backed by the federal government. They would be nowhere if it wasn't them protecting them. And so what we have to do is we have to go and get into the space of saying, you know what, federal government, this is not a delegated power. We never gave this to you. We never authorized you to, you know, to interfere in these types of matters. And if you recognize what Republic Review does, it forces the federal government into compliance. In other words, they can't force us to accept these agendas anymore. We don't have to have an LGBT agenda being driven down our throats in school. We can actually make school about preparing kids for going into the career force, actually being productive in society, instead of making them really good weaponized he-she's or she-he's or whatever. Come on. We're actually creating our own worst enemy by allowing and enabling people to chase this debauchery, this debasement. We can make it back, but we need your help. We really need your help to say, you know what, this GR is absolutely right. We can't afford to be chasing health freedom and vaccinations. We can't afford to be chasing the LGBT agenda. If we all worked together and focused on getting the federal government and getting one state to stand up, work with me in getting Wyoming in next year's election, helping them get to a position where they can actually stand up and call the other states out and say, join us and demand compliance to the Constitution. If you don't understand this process, go to reclaimingtherepublic.org. Right there on the homepage, I have the outlines or the bullet arguments and the bullet process so you can go through and look at it. If you've got questions, email me, info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And with that, with the 1 minute I have left, let me jump forward to some groveling. If you want to support this show, buy Red State Coffee. If you buy Red State Coffee, they will help subsidize this show. I'm hoping to get to a point where I don't even need to, where I have enough support that I don't need to, you know, seek sponsorships. Now, Red State Coffee is one of those that we'll probably keep just due to the fact that they believe in what we're doing and they want to support us. And they've created this line, Red State Coffee. And I just ask you to go try the Red State Coffee beans. When you kind of find out who these people are, look at their other brand, or I should say brands or flavors or what have you. And I'm sure they'd be happy to accommodate you because it's all about you making the customer happy, but it's also about supporting a good cause. These guys support Gold Star families, the families that lost a loved one who gave the ultimate sacrifice for their nation. So, I mean, you can't find a better organization than that. So I'm just asking you, if you want to support this show, go get yourself Red State Coffee. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org. And click on the link and go buy some Red State Coffee. Give that a try, and then we will actually get a little bit of help. It's not much, but every cup you drink will help. Because over time, if everybody that's drinking coffee decides to buy their coffee from Red State Coffee, you're really helping probably the best cause. We'll be right back. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue. So other than the Red State Coffee, there's other ways you can support us. We do have the crowdfunding. It would be nice if, it would be great if people that really understood this process and what the heck was going on and how this money is only being used for travel. It's not like I'm going on vacations here. These are strictly work travel, necessary travel to go and help get other people informed and help them get involved in these dark red states. It takes a person to do that, and apparently I'm breathing and I actually can articulate in English, so I suffice. Anyway, the link to the crowdfunding is also on reclaimingtherepublic.org. So you're more than welcome to go and take a look at the campaign. Look at what we need. Help us. That would be a great way. I hate to have my hand out. I would like to get to a point where I could find somebody with the money to really kind of just support us and hold us accountable to what we need to be doing so that we can get this stuff done. And then I don't even have to waste, you know, as much time as I do in trying to ask for your support. But that won't be enough. Even if somebody could write the check, I still need people to get involved. You have to start getting involved in your local area. You have to get off of your lazy chair. You have to start talking to people about the Constitution. You don't have to be the smartest guy on the block. All you need to be is somebody that's passionate, that loves and understands the Constitution and what it takes to get compliance to it. And when I say understand the Constitution, it's this simple. The Constitution is a contract. It was written for and by the states, and the states are the stakeholders of the contract. Therefore, the states have all the authority necessary to force the contract. Anybody that tells you you don't know what you're talking about, and if you can't articulate why and the what hows, then all you got to do is say, you know what, if you don't believe me, you better check out this guy by the name of G.R. Mobley, because you do not have an argument to shut him down. He has all the evidence, and even though I may not be able to cite all of this stuff, there's no doubt in my mind, because he cites the stuff, and there's just no way I can remember all of it. But I do know this, that the Constitution is a contract, and the states have all the power necessary to force the federal government into compliance until we give up the contract. The day we surrender that contract, all hope is lost, because we lose our authority. It is the Constitution that has vested the authority in the states. And they, oh, it does not. There's no authority vested. Read Article 7, dimwit. Article 7 clearly requires that there be so many states that ratify. They talk about how to ratify, and it identifies who has to ratify. It wasn't the president, it wasn't SCOTUS, and it wasn't Congress that had to ratify. It was the states. In other words, the states are the things that give the Constitution power and force in that contract. So anyway, if you've got some brilliant person that thinks they understand and know about the Constitution and think they can shut me down, just have them contact me, info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. I'll be happy to set them straight. This isn't rocket science. This is very simple. It's basic contract law. But we do need your support. We need you to get involved. We don't have a lot of time. We've got 5 years, folks, and it's time to start rolling up our sleeves and actually, you know, shoveling in the dung, or actually I should say shoveling out the dung, and start cleaning up this pile of heap that has been created by the leftists over the past century and a half. So if you've got a phone, you got a computer, info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. The other thing I want to get into is really quick. You know, I support the Constitution Club. Go join the Constitution Club. It's constitutionclub.ning.com. Go get involved with Keith. That's an awesome organization. There's all sorts of content there. And if you lack the knowledge on Republic Review and so forth, go get involved. Keith has a lot of great educational material. Another organization I support is ourfirstright.org. Get involved in supporting that as well. These aren't things that are going to consume a lot of time. You don't have to become a professional activist, okay? All you've got to do is just get involved. Make some phone calls. Give somebody, you know, a ration every once in a while, and you'll feel a lot better. Boy, I tell you, it's cathartic. Anyway, let me kind of just jump forward into, you know, some of the final things I've got to do. And then I'm going to get into nullification and our interposition. You know, Constitution Club, now, not Constitution Club, Constitution Day is now around the corner. I mean, we're even a month closer. So What are you going to do, and how are you going to celebrate Constitution Day? Get going. You're going to regret the fact that you had opportunities, you had me prodding you on a daily basis for the past few months. Get going. Let us know what you're going to do. Let us know, and we will be happy to plug your event. The other thing I want to tell you is thank you for tuning in. We need you to want one thing you can really do in helping, even if you can't do anything else. Even if you're afraid to articulate, get people to start listening to this show. Help this show grow. Helping the show grow will actually help the message get into more ears and minds. People will start recognizing that the solution has been in front of us all of this time. And everybody was reading the tea leaves incorrectly. That's what I'll say. Everybody has been reading the tea leaves incorrectly. So, as you know, there has been no news that the federal government is going to, I'll just say, surrender its constitutional roles, responsibilities, and powers. And because of that, what that means is that we're going to have to do this. You and I, there's no way around this. Okay? We have to roll up our sleeves and get involved. So let me get into this nullification and our interposition. Because I'm telling you, interposition is republic review. Excuse me. Okay, you know this is going to be a long show because I'm including this preface. So let me just give you this preface because prefaces have a function. So to the point, I don't want to have a long preface. I want a quick, succinct preface. This article or this position I'm taking, I'm not asking you to take our word for it. Don't take my word for it. This is the article that is academic in nature. And for that, every reader needs to come to a reasonable conclusion as to whether I am blowing smoke or whether I'm really putting the meat on the tray here for you. So instead, let's do this. Let's try to challenge you to prove me wrong. Not with the analysis or conclusions. There's all sorts of people that can go out and do their own analysis and conclusions. What I'm saying is if you're going to prove me wrong, give me an academic argument that proves my academic argument wrong. Because I'm not going to try. I do have some analysis. I do have some conclusions. But it's all tied to academic evidence. So I'm leaving it out there for you. If you think what I'm going to assert regarding nullification and interposition is incorrect, well, those are just empty words unless you back it up with some citations as to how and why I'm incorrect. So I'll start off with this. The Constitution is a limited and defined compact written for and by the states. I already said that earlier, and I'm going to say that every time because that is the fact. To provide absolute clarity on the necessary actions of the states when they're confronted with unconstitutional government and unconstitutional laws, and even outright tyranny, one must first define the Constitution as it was defined by the delegates who wrote the Constitution at the Constitutional Convention to the states. So in other words, they may have defined it during the convention, but when they defined it to the states, during the ratification debates, that is the pivotal point. Why? Because the Constitution being a compact, those definitions and clarifications of the Constitution during the ratification process are the legally binding definitions and terms. Consequently, as the Constitution was defined to the states in a variety of ways, the states were told that the general government, in other words, the federal government's jurisdiction and powers were limited to the enumerated objects because of its enumerated design. It was argued that there was no need for a Bill of Rights. And I'm here to tell you that this concept as it was spelled out in several ways that clarified exactly how limited the general government is by the Constitution, to me proved that we didn't need the Bill of Rights. As an aside, I will tell you that it became fortuitous that we had, or beneficial, that we had a Bill of Rights that we could apply to the states because of the 14th Amendment. It was the 14th Amendment that applied the Bill of Rights to the states, because when we actually started freeing people, we really needed something to suppress the states from taking away people's civil rights. And when I say freeing, I'm talking about the freemen in the Civil War. And so the Bill of Rights was really a huge blessing that we had, but we didn't need them. And there was never really a Bill of Rights case, really, that was monumental until the Civil War and the rights of the freemen were being taken away. We'll be right back after these two promos. I don't want to bleed into the commercials again. We'll be right back. Thank you so much. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Okay, so when we were going into break, and I apologize, sometimes I just bleed really into the last second, and I don't mean to do that. But then again, not that I don't care to be polished, I'm not going to be focusing my effort into trying to be the consummate or the epitome of a professional conservative entertainer. I don't care about that. I only care about the solutions, saving you, your family, and your posterity from tyranny and losing our liberty. That's what I really care about. And so, you know, as I tell people when they read my books, you know, they go, oh, well, there's some glaring errors with this, just the way you wrote it. It's too difficult to read because it's college level. And I'm going, so that makes it bad? Really, when a young man or a kid comes running out of the woods and, you know, says, and you go, well, spit it out, kid. What the heck? And because he has a stuttering problem, when he's really excited, he just can't get his speech right. What is the town people going to do? Here's the town people see this kid running into town from the woods, and he's just, and people just go, what the heck? And they just, you know, dismiss the kid and they all walk away. Well, what if that kid was trying to say fire on the other side of that ridge, there's a fire coming this way, and it is going to burn this town to the ground. Well, I guess it would have paid to actually have gotten over your arrogance and your need for a, well-defined and well-articulated argument, and sat there and kind of let the kid calm down and come to the, if you want to call it a calm state, so he could actually see fire. There's fire on the other side of this ridge, and it's heading this way. And the wind, you can't see it because it's kind of whipping around, both sides of this ridge. And so, and the wind is so strong that when it comes over that ridge line, it's over, buddy. Well, I think you'd have, at that point, would have really appreciated taking the time to actually get that message. That's the same thing with my books. If you're one of those people that just, can't try to hunker down and try to read a book that was written at college level, I wasn't going to sit down and try because I know I'm not really good at communicating, especially at a child level. I probably could be, but it's hard for me to do that in organizing an academic argument. Bottom line is, I wrote those books because they are the most relevant books that basically have the most relevant message for today. Now, I will say this, because I get poked in the eye by the John Birch Society. The concept of Republic Review was in its infancy at that point in time. It has matured to a point that not even the John Birch Society can poke holes in the current process and the current argument. They try, but even those that really understand the Constitution, what they have to do is they have to lie, just like they did when I gave my presentation in Spokane just a couple of weeks ago. Now, I have the video and I have the audio of the John Birchers lying and telling me, I'll get into that. I'm going to provide all of this. As a matter of fact, I'm going to create a very special page for the John Birch Society. And I'm going to start creating very special pages for organizations that will actually say, you know what, we don't want to have anything to do with Republic Review. Because bottom line, you need to know this. You need to know the organizations that are supporting the status quo and the direction towards our ultimate peril, or I should say our ultimate demise. They are supporting peril and pushing us in harm's way and pushing us to our ultimate demise. There you go. How's that? As you can tell, I don't script these things. So anyway, let me get back to what I was talking about for interposition, because what was being said at the ratification debates were the clarity. Those were the elucidations. They were the definitions. They were the clarifications of what each line, what each clause, what the Constitution meant. Even more importantly, there is no evidence whatsoever in the ratification debates that the Constitution was defined as a living document or anything contrary to the fact that the Constitution is a hard, fast compact limited to the enumerated powers, period. To ensure no one takes my word for this, let me give you a few examples. So let's start with the Massachusetts debates. And we start with Massachusetts because Massachusetts was the first state to set the precedents in the ratification process. Since along with the ratifying of the Constitution, they also forwarded recommended amendments to the Constitution in a want for a, quote, Bill of Rights, unquote. To be clear, as a matter of fact, Mason and, the other people that left the Constitutional Convention, like Eldridge Gerry, who was huge in, wanting a Bill of Rights, And I told you, if you remember, Eldridge Gerry was summoned. He was not allowed to be at the ratification debates, but the anti-federalists there said, hey, we want him here because he's not one of these other guys. We want to hear what he has to say. And what he had to say didn't help the anti-federalist one bit. And so, and down the road, Eldridge Gerry hit his infamy because of gerrymandering, Mandarin, because gerrymandering is actually gerrymandering. It's just been mispronounced, but his name was Eldridge Gerry and not Jerry. And so they say gerrymandering because it's G-E-R-R-Y, but it was pronounced Gerry. Eldridge Gerry. Anyway, to be clear, the Constitution was not a general grant of powers. Within it were the listed powers that were delegated to the federal government. If the power was not listed, the federal government had no business messing with it. And below, when we get to the Virginia ratification debates, George Nicholas uses a different term. He uses meddle instead of messing. So we'll get to that sequentially as we kind of go through this flow. So in the Massachusetts debate, Mr. Samuel Adams basically states this, quote, "It removes a doubt which many have entertained respecting the matter that gives assurance that if a law be made by the federal government shall be extended beyond the power granted by the proposed Constitution and inconsistent with the Constitution of this state, it will be an error and adjudged by the courts of law to be void. It is consonant with the second article in the present Confederation that each state retains its sovereignty, freedom, and independence, and every power, jurisdiction, and right which is not by this Confederation expressly delegated to the United States and Congress assembled." So there he's basically giving the argument, and the argument actually came from John Hancock, if you remember when we went through these debates, and it's about that time we do them again. But I will say that John Hancock was the one that said, hey, you know, we see some, not glaring problems, but we see some things that would give us greater love or affinity towards this Constitution if we could actually, you know, have these Bill of Rights or these negatives like the 10th Amendment, the 9th Amendment, and so forth. And so John Hancock just said, hey, let's come up with some amendments, and that this was the reply from Samuel Adams that we needed to do this. The North Carolina debates. Now, these are fascinating, but the stark comparison Mr. Iredell uses in placing the Constitution, which is a contract, into context to a power of attorney is a very powerful metaphor, because today most people understand a power of attorney and how it is a contract that empowers someone with either general powers or specific powers. If you understand the concept, you know, of a general power of attorney and a specific power of attorney, and you start using that context to a contract, I think, the epiphany happens. Mr. Iredell makes one of the best arguments that a Bill of Rights is not needed. It was absolutely a waste of time, except as I started off, until the Civil War, because we really needed to be able to place nugatory powers on the state governments as well as the federal government in protecting civil rights. Civil rights was not a real issue until the Civil War. There were very few cases where people were pursuing their civil rights. Not like today. I mean, it's just like, that's why we have an ACLU that's going around like ambulance chasers running around after people. Hey, your civil rights were violated! When they probably weren't. But anyway, the Bill of Rights became such a benefit after the Civil War in placing them into the 14th Amendment, Section 1. So Mr. Iredell says this, "Did any man ever hear before that at the end of a power of attorney, it was said that the attorney should not execute more power than was there given him? Suppose, for instance, a man had lands in the counties of Anniston and Coswell." Well, there you go with that music. I'm going to, before I, because this is a long sentence, I'm going to come back with this regarding suppose a man had land in Anson and Coswell. So we'll get back to this when we come back. So please stay tuned, and we're going to drill through this. And like I said, this is going to take more than one day. So hang on, but these are the arguments that will help you down the road. We'll be right back. Folks, Red State Talk Radio has brought back its monthly newsletter. I know everyone gets a lot of emails, but this is not a daily or weekly newsletter. It's a monthly newsletter. So you will not be overwhelmed with a plethora of emails from Red State Talk Radio. Come on, it's only once a month. I'll be contributing a constitutional perspective to one of the current issues to help everyone see an alternative perspective, or what I believe would be a framer's perspective regarding the issue to help us maintain a constitutional paradigm. I will also provide information regarding a significant historical context to the time of year so that we can remember our history, so we will not be doomed to repeat the inevitable failings from forgetting our past and origins. Just go to Red State Talk Radio and sign up for the newsletter. This way you can get a focused view of what is going on in the Republic as well as what is going on at Red State Talk Radio. Thank you. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. Okay, so suppose, I'm going to go right into this, so I don't want to belabor this, because this is really important, and it's really meaty stuff, so hang in there, folks. Come on, this is really important. This is all about liberty. We want to save and secure liberty. You have to understand the argument between nullification and interposition. And that's where the big difference is between a lot of these conservative organizations that say, oh, it's nullification. No, nullification is worthless in this aspect. And we'll get into all of this. That's what this whole next couple of days are about. Suppose, for instance, a man had lands in the counties of Anson and Coswell, and he should give another a power of attorney to sell his lands in Anson. Would the other have any authority to sell the lands in Coswell? Or could he, without absurdity, say, 'Tis true, you have not expressly authorized me to sell the lands in Coswell, but as you had lands there and did not say I should not, I thought it might as well to sell those lands as the others. A Bill of Rights, as I conceive, would not be only incongruous but dangerous. No man, let his ingenuity be what it will, could enumerate all the individual rights not relinquished by this Constitution. Suppose, therefore, an enumeration of a great many, but an omission of some, and that long after all traces of our present disputes were at the end, any of the omitted rights should be invaded and the invasion be complained of, what would there be plausible answer to the government of such a complaint? And I'm going to stop right here and tell you the concept of privacy and abortion were precisely those types of nugatory things to say, hey, it doesn't say that we can't make regulations about privacy. Well, because it wasn't in the Bill of Rights, they have no jurisdiction. And so they use the Bill of Rights and this necessary and proper and all of these other types of clauses to infringe upon this concept of whether a person could get an abortion or not. So let me kind of read this over because this is important. Suppose, therefore, an enumeration of great many within the Bill of Rights, but an omission of some, that after long after traces of our present disputes were at an end, any of the omitted rights should be invaded and the invasion be complained of, what would be the plausible answer of the government to such a complaint? Would they not naturally say, we live at a great distance from the time when this Constitution was established. We can judge of it better, much better, of the ideas of it entertained at the time than by any ideas of our own. The Bill of Rights passed at the time showed that the people did not think every power retained which was not given. Else, this Bill of Rights was not only useless but absurd. But we are not at liberty to charge or to charge an absurdity upon our ancestors who have given such strong proofs of their good sense as well as their attachment to liberty. So long as the rights enumerated in the Bill of Rights remain unviolated, you have no reason to complain. This is not one of them. Thus, a Bill of Rights might operate as a snare rather than a protection. If we had formed a general legislature with undefined powers, a Bill of Rights would not only have been proper, but necessary, and it would have then operated as an exception. The whole concept of having a Bill of Rights with an enumerated constitution makes this whole concept absurd. To the legislative authority in such particulars, it has this effect in respect to some of the American constitutions, where the powers of legislation are general, but where they are powers of a particular nature and expressed defined, as in the case of the Constitution before us, I think the reason I have given a Bill of Rights is not only unnecessary, but would be absurd and dangerous. And so I think that that was probably one of the best metaphors and one of the best arguments placed in the North Carolina, out of all the ratification debates. I love that because most people get the concept of a power of attorney. Hey, would you give me a general power of attorney so I can just do anything to you? Heck no. People are very, very careful when they give a general power of attorney. And you better really trust that person that you've given that power to. Let's mosey on into the Virginia debates. Out of the original 13 states, the one that best supports the limited and defined federal government was the Virginia debates. Clearly, Madison was the most succinct and to the point with this one statement. And this was during the Virginia ratification debates, and it was on June 6th, by the way. The powers of the federal government are enumerated, semicolon. It can only operate in certain cases, semicolon. It has legislative powers on defined and limited objects, comma, beyond which it cannot extend its jurisdiction, period. I give you the punctuation because the punctuation is very, very important. Now, here's the testimony that I referred to earlier regarding George Nicholas and the concept of messing with something, where he uses the term meddle. And this was also on June 6th by George Nicholas during the Virginia ratification debates. But it is objected to for want of a Bill of Rights. It is a principle universally agreed upon that all powers not given are retained, whereby the Constitution, the general government, has general powers for any purpose. Its powers are absolute. Where it has powers with some exceptions, they are absolute only as to those exceptions. In either case, the people retain what is not conferred on the general government as it is by their positive grant that it has of its powers in England in all disputes between the king and the people, recurrence is had to the enumerated powers of people. Are the rights in dispute secured? In other words, are they secured in a Bill of Rights? Are they included in the Magna Carta specifically, or the Bill of Rights, etc.? If not, in England, they are generally speaking within the king's prerogative. However, in disputes between Congress and the people, the reverse is the proposition holds. Is the disputed right enumerated? In other words, is the disputed right of abortion or privacy an enumerated power? If not, Congress cannot meddle with it. Is that clear enough for you? Well, one of the most powerful statements that came from the future Chief Justice, where he actually did a very good job in obscuring his statements and the ratification debates, was John Marshall. And this statement aligns and supports with the limited jurisdiction with the federal court, and that the law or case is regarding something that is not within the enumerated power, the court would deem it unconstitutional and or not within their jurisdiction. So here's what John Marshall states. Has the government of the United States power to make laws on every subject? Does he understand it so? Of course not. I mean, of course not, because the person he was talking to, does he understand it so? He knows better. Can they make laws affecting the mode of transferring property or contracts or claims between citizens of the state? Absolutely not. Can they go beyond the delegated powers? Of course not. Everybody up to this point, this was like several days later. Of course, they are enumerated. They can't go beyond these things. If they were to make a law, this is him saying, if they were to make a law not warranted by any of the powers enumerated, it would be considered by the judges and an infringement of the Constitution, which they are to guard. They would not consider such a law as coming under their jurisdiction. Obviously, John Marshall's ruling contradicted his testimony here in the cases he reviewed through the verdict. Even though the verdicts of these cases were correct, what he uttered were literally contradictions of what he said in the ratification debates. So which of his words are correct? The words he used to sell the contract or the compact to the delegates at the state of Virginia's ratification debates, or his later opinions? The only thing that matters is what he said and how the Constitution was defined at the time of ratification. These are the only legal definitions that can be used as all the contracts within the bounds of contract law, because those words he used helped sell the concept that there was these hard, fast limitations. Now he goes on and blathers that, oh, well, we can do anything necessary and proper because we have those powers, because of the supremacy. He literally started bamboozling, hoodwinking, lying, and deceiving. And if he was here today, I'd poke him in the eye, but he's been dead. With that, we will cover the rest of this and go into this tomorrow. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to, so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution.